He's got too much pine tar.
Sloppy yeah. Jalopy. They were doing the Chris Davis fishing for it.
Might be going to call George Brett out.
Well, he is. He's out.
Yes,
Brett is out. Look at this. Brett is out.
And Demon Matt.
He is out. And having to be forcibly restrained from hitting plate umpire Tim McClellan.
Too much pottar.
way too much pottar.
Welcome back to another episode of Too Much Pod Tar. As we continue the team offseason series for this podcast, next up is the Miami Marlins. They finished the season 31-29, second in the NL East, and they ended up getting to the NLDS, beating the Cubs in the wild card series, but then wound up losing their first postseason series ever, getting swept by the Braves in the division series. So nonetheless, though, it was a really good season for them. Obviously, they weren't expecting to go anywhere, but, you know, then ended up making the playoffs. That was still a positive to take away from the season. And Don Mattingly was named the manager of the year when they announced that last week. So, yeah, for this episode, I got Stoffer Cochran on. You can follow him on Twitter at Stoffer81, STOFFER81. He was also on the episode of this podcast on to preview their season. It was way back in whatever February or March when we thought there was going to be an actual season, the full 162 game season. But yeah, welcome to the show.
Ah, thanks for having me. Yeah, what a crazy year 2020 was, right, so far?
Yeah, for sure. It's been a whirlwind. Now it's...
Yeah, so recap a little bit of the 2020 review. The first playoff appearance in 17 years, and the first season above 500 since 2009. All good stuff for a young, fresh rebuild that the Marlins are working on. I read somewhere the other day that the Marlins are the only team in MLB history to secure a postseason berth following a 100 loss season the year before. So, yeah. Fun stuff.
Yeah, it's some crazy stuff. That's what's I guess that's what sometimes just I don't know if they would have still made the playoffs, but I don't know, in a full season it would have been tougher, obviously.
Well, and the expanded playoff format also aided in that a little bit. So, right. The season, it seemed lost after the first series, after they were stranded in Philly for, over a week because of COVID-19. They had 18 different players impacted. Mm-hmm. And for the season, they ended up using a total of 61 players.
Yeah.
25 position players and 37 pitchers. And a fun fact, only 5 players started and concluded the year on the starting roster, including 18 major league debuts this year for the Marlins. So to think they made the playoffs after overcoming all that adversity is just, it's a good sign of culture in the clubhouse.
Yeah, for sure. And that's a big testament to Don Mattingly's leadership. Of course, that's why he won the manager of the year. So that's huge.
Yes, and then, you know, kind of looking back and reflecting a little bit, some of the off-season bats they signed, you know, they signed Villar. He kind of busted out in Miami, but we were able to flip him for another prospect to add to the prospect depth, and let alone Mr. Marlin's son, Griffin Conine. So that was a good add. We got Dickerson, who in 194 at-bats only hit 7 home runs with 17 RBIs, but kind of showed some of the younger guys how to approach the hitting. Mm-hmm. And showed signs of life near the end of the season. So looking forward to 2021 with him. Came a little bit. Wouldn't expect much from him, but the biggest, I think, offseason bat that really made an impact this year is Jesus Aguilar. He hit .277 with a .352 on base percentage. Talking 18 extra base hits with 34 RBIs and only 188 at-bats. Kind of extrapolate that over the season, we have a bona fide first baseman on our hands.
Yeah, for sure. I've always liked his bat, and when you guys signed him, I was really excited to see what he can do there. He definitely was one of the big keys for their lineup.
And then a couple homegrown guys that kind of contributed pretty well for the year. Miguel Rojas, kind of the leader of the team. He provides the energy, spark, 125 at-bats this year, 15 extra base hits with 20 RBIs, 5 stolen bases. He had, I think, a .392 on base percentage for the year. And team kind of rallied around him this year. And then Brian Anderson is another one of my favorites on the team. A little underrated as a third baseman goes, but exceptional defense. You know, he had 200 at-bats, and he had 19 extra base hits with 38 RBIs. Kind of wanted a little more in the average department, but 345 on base percentage, you can't really complain about that. Probably see him hitting fifth or sixth in the lineup. So, good stuff there, I think, from the bats. The arms, there was a lot to kind of look back on. Sandy Alcantara just continued to show that he's going to be a solid pitcher in the major leagues. And then we had major league debut for Sixto Sanchez, Trevor Rogers, Braxton Garrett. All of them showed excellent stuff and showed a lot of stuff that they need to work on. Sixto, impressive. Mm-hmm. Good trade. Just maybe needs to work on attacking the batters a little more and redeveloping that pitch, you know, that one pitch that can get him out of a jam every time.
Right. Yeah, I'm excited to see what he can do going forward. It was definitely awesome to see him make his debut during a crazy season like it was.
Oh, absolutely. And we had 18 debuts. I could run down the list of names, but some of the highlights were Jesus Sanchez, Lewin Diaz, Jazz Chisholm on the offensive side. None of them really impressed, I think, with their offensive ability, but they all showed patience at the plate more so than they had in the minor leagues. They showed a good work ethic, and they played solid defense. Yeah. So until the bat comes around, you kind of look at these other intangibles that they showcased during this year and kind of gets the future a little brighter in my eyes.
Yeah, so that's kind of the season for the Marlins, some of the big bright spots. Transitioning to the offseason now, they've obviously started some of their moves already. Back on October 18th, they parted ways with Michael Hill, who was their president of baseball operations, and they've had to go and make a move for replacement for their GM position. So, and then just, you know, less than a month later, which was on now Friday, they found the new GM, and it's a big move. They hired Kim Ang, I believe that's how you say her name, and she's the first female GM in any major pro North American sport. Breaking the glass ceiling there, and she's, you know, she brings a lot of experience to the team. 30 plus years in the working in the front offices. Started with the White Sox, was there from 1990 to 1996, and then went to the Yankees from 1998 to 2001. Then the Dodgers 2002 to 2011, and also worked in the commissioner's office from 2011 to this past year. So, and also, she's won 3 World Series rings with the teams that she was on. Of course, the Yankees, she from their for their three-peat. So, she's definitely a big piece to bring in, and gonna come in and I think make some really good moves here. So just, and then she had her introductory press conference today, the day we're recording this, on Monday. So, and then she said, you know, just a couple of quotes to run by here. What she said: "The fact that it has affected this many people is extraordinary. I thought it'd be a big deal, but it's beyond my expectations. But it's also a testament to where we are. People are looking for hope. People are looking for inspiration. I'm happy to be a part of it." So yeah, that's definitely huge. I love the move. I definitely gotta applaud the Marlins for making it. So, what are your thoughts on the whole?
It's a great hire, long overdue. She's interviewed with a bunch of different teams: the Mariners, the Padres, the Angels, the Giants, and Phillies, and never really got her chance. She, fun fact, not only is she the first female GM, my research tells me that she's the first Asian American GM as well. Mm-hmm. And her first, looking back and kind of, you know, wanting to know more about her, the first kind of highlight real thing she did is she went up against Scott Boras when she was working for the White Sox in an arbitration case for Alex Fernandez, and she won that. So anybody goes up against him, it's always a good sign, right? So she does have a lot of experience in the front office. 21 years front office experience. I don't know anybody else we could have hired that could say that they have that much work experience. And then the 9 years in the front office for the MLB, she was learning from how these different clubs operate and then internationally. And her focus was working with the MLB front office on international. So making it exciting for future drafts and international free agents to add to a pretty loaded franchise as it is.
Yeah, and I know, like, since Derek Jeter stepped in as, you know, the owner of the team, majority owner, he's got some backlash about some of the moves he's made, but this one he's definitely getting applauded for. But so I don't know what your thoughts on are some of the other moves he's made in the past that have kind of gotten a little bit of a slack from. What are your thoughts on him so far?
I think he's doing what needed to be done to build a contender. I mean, bringing Kim Ng in, and if you look at her experience, not only does she have so much experience, but she has experience with who? The Dodgers, the Yankees. I mean, two teams that when you think baseball, you think of them, and they're very successful organizations. So he's leveraging what he's known his entire baseball career, and he's trying to produce his vision of that product on the field. And everything he's done, it had to be done. Trading away the big three outfielders when he first kind of went into office, that was rough because everybody had flashbacks of the old regime, and cheapest payroll is what they were always going for. But if you look at some of those trades, some of those prospects are paying dividends. They stocked the cover. They did what they had to do. They hired the right people. They're getting themselves into a position to have a team for the long haul and not just a quick one and done season and move on.
Yeah. That's just the tough thing that teams have to go through if they're rebuilding. It's just, you know, the fans are going to have to live with the fact that they're going to be, you know, not too good for a number of years. Like, now a team like that now is probably someone like the Orioles, the Tigers. They're going to be pretty bad for a number of years until they can be good again. But.
Absolutely. Patience is key, especially when you don't have the budget of some of these other big market teams. And I know during the press conference today, they discussed a little bit about not having the budget some of the other market teams, and there's just going to be a higher commitment to prospect development and making sure that the moves that they do make are the right moves for their organization. And that's all you can really ask for, especially with a small market team.
Right. So yeah, some other moves. They also declined the option on, or decided not to pick up the option on Brandon Kinsler, $4 million $4 million club option. So he was their closer, so they're going to have to find somebody else as a closer. Another big arm in their bullpen is Brad Boxberger, who's a free agent. They still got Yimi Garcia, who's probably the most experienced guy in-house for that closer role. But they're definitely going to have to look at the reliever market to find somebody, one or two arms in there to replace those guys. So I don't know if you looked at it at all to see what kind of guys they would want to look to get.
Well, I've kind of scoured the free agent market. It'd be nice to try to bring in someone like Brad Hand or Liam Hendricks with recent success, especially in the late inning roles. Some of the under the radar signings, I think maybe they can try to get Brandon Kinsler back at a cheaper rate. Yeah. Maybe they thought the market for him, because he did have a negative 0.2 war. So they felt maybe there was some flexibility on the payroll. Maybe somebody like Carl Edwards or Jose Alvarez or Jake McGee. Maybe some of the under-radar guys, and they compare with the guys they have. And Alex Vesia is a rookie that they have in their minor league system, 2019 minor league all-star relief pitcher. He's got really high ceiling, and he could be get a chance, but I think Yimi's going to be the guy to start off the season if they don't make any big moves in the relief pitcher market.
Yeah, I think that, it would be nice for them to sign somebody like Brad Hand, like you said, but they're probably not really in the market for someone like that, because he's going to be in high demand for a lot of teams that are in need of relievers, so we pretty tough to be able to get in a bidding war like that. So I think, like you said, some of the other guys that like Carl Edwards and stuff, like guys like that, that would be guys that they probably target mostly.
Absolutely. And they have some depth in the minor leagues too, of minor league guys, mainly starters, but they can switch them around and see what they got to get them some major league experience too. So not signing one of the big name guys isn't detrimental, but it's always just like a nice to have, you know.
Oh yeah, for sure. And then another big news was that Francisco Cervelli, their third string catcher, he announced his retirement. So they're going to be in the market for another catcher as well. With they still got Jorge Alfaro and Chad Wallach, who, you know, Wallach obviously ended up stepping in as kind of the main catcher. Because he was better defensively behind the plate, so he's probably going to end up being the starter to start off next year. But definitely going to have to look for somebody else there for a backup.
Yeah, the dream scenario here would be to try to get Robuto back, right? But that's a huge investment that I know that they're probably not going to be willing to make. There's some other guys on the market too that could step in and kind of fill the void here, but Alfaro's still young. He has a offensive profile is pretty good for a catcher. Wallach doesn't have the same offensive profile, but a called strike rate was about 7.5% higher than Alfaro, which is what they needed when they were down the stretch to get some of these games closed out to make the playoffs. So I think they're going to work with both of them, but some other names on the market, maybe a James McCann or a Wilson Ramos, if they're available still. Need to check the free agent tracker, but those two names would make a lot of sense to come here if maybe they can get them on a 1 or 2 year deal, just to see what they have and they're working with Alfaro.
Yeah, for sure. Well, at this point, I think there hasn't been many free agent signings yet, so I think there's only been like one or two so far, which I'm not surprised by at all, because I know it's going to be a pretty slow offseason. I think, I've said this on other episodes, but I think most of the moves will be made like towards the end of this offseason when teams start figuring out what they're doing. Like, it's just kind of tough with the situation we're in, just like with the whole COVID situation. It's tough to really feel out what's going to go on with the next season.
There's so much in the air, so much in the air with COVID-19 and just not knowing what's going on and how it's going to progress. So I think teams are definitely going to it with a fair bit of concern. But the closer we get to the season, I think the hotter that stove is going to burn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I know it's going to be a really slow couple months here at the beginning until we get to, January.
And then if we look at the middle of the field and the first, second, third, and short, I think there's a lot of depth they have already on the roster. So there's not going to be I hear a lot of fans on the Twitter world talking about trying to go out and land Francisco Lindor for a year. But I think that would be a mistake given away all the prospects that it would take to acquire him, knowing that you're probably not going to be able to afford to re-sign him.
No.
But at second and short, you have Chisholm, Rojas, Diaz, Birdie, that can all fill in that spot. So I would think target maybe a veteran guy like Brad Miller, Galvis, or, Drexen Profar to kind of fill any void you might have there as a bench bat or come into play if they need to.
Yeah, for sure. And another move they made, they picked up the option on Starlin Marte, so he's back for next year. That's a pretty big piece to their offense as well, so I like that they brought him back.
Oh, absolutely. Losing him for the playoffs hurt a lot more than I think most people realize. He really, when he came over on that trade, he kind of sparked the whole team and gave him new life. So I look forward to seeing him roaming center field for the whole year.
Oh, yeah. That would definitely be a key for them. So what is their roster at 40 yet, or is it still below that? I think
I've been checking online, and it looks like they have 40 on MLB's website, but
let's see. Yeah, because I know the deadline
it's tough to tell in the offseason.
Or wait, the deadline's like a couple of days, so they're probably there.
Yeah, they made some moves here. Let's see. Yeah, it looks like they got their 40-man set right now, but there's always guys that can move around on that depending on free agent signings and whatnot.
Yeah. So obviously the bar was set this past season, making the playoffs. So what would be your hopes for this coming season? What the expectations are at?
Well, I think realistic expectations are just to have a winning record this year. I know I said at the beginning of last season if they would just finish above 500, that'd be a win, and let alone it was a win and a playoff run. So that's good to see. I would want to see that, and I'd want to see continued development out of the young players. Want to see what Jazz can do. Want to see what Jesus Sanchez can do. Want to see what Monty Harrison can do. Lewis Brinson started coming on late last year, or this year, last year. Want to see the development of Trevor Rogers, Sixto Sanchez, Braxton Garrett. We got some other pitchers coming up, Edward Cabrera, Nick Nadert. Just there's a lot of guys that need to come out and show what they are. So I don't think targeting another playoff run will be the key of success. I think continued development and maturity of the young players on the roster will define success for this season.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. That they obviously, as we said, the kind of expanded playoffs help them make the playoffs. So we're not necessarily going to be striving to do that, but obviously it would be a big, it would be a, wouldn't be, it wouldn't hurt for them to do that, of course, but.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah, we also, just breaking off the Marlins for a second, we also got this, I think it was, yeah, the third, only the third free agent signing so far on this Monday. Drew Smyly signed a one-year contract with the Braves. They add to their, try to add to the rotation a bit. He got one-year deal for $11 million. That's after they re-signed Josh Tomlin as well, a relief pitcher for them. So, you know, Drew Smyly's not anything special, but he'll definitely add a piece to that rotation. You know, with all the young guys they have, they could definitely use somebody just to kind of have like a back end of the rotation type of guy, because they don't really have much there at the end. But
yeah, they were decimated last year with injuries to the starting pitching staff, and then to go as far as the Braves did last year is crazy. They managed to piece that together. And Smiley's a good signing, I think, because he's also a left-handed pitcher, and he can provide some leadership to the rest of the young guys there. And last year he did have a 1.10 whip, so he's got some talent in there.
Oh, yeah. And then the second free agent signing was Robbie Ray re-signing with the Blue Jays for 1 year, $8 million. So, you know, it's been, like I said, other than that, it's nothing else. So it's been slow so far. Kind of, as you know, kind of just starting to feel things out, see where the markets are being set at. You know, so we'll see what happens with a lot of these free agents. Obviously, the big guys like Trevor Bauer and then of course the free agents. I mean, the trade market as well with Lindor. That'll be a big thing to look at. So.
Yeah, I just can't believe Robbie Ray got an $8 million deal after the season he had last year. Yeah. I guess there's a lot of projection in him going forward at 29 years old.
Yeah, I think his ceiling is still kind of high. Just he's got to figure out the walks. He just walks too many guys. He has the strikeout rate figured out, but.
You can't give him the free passes and expect to be successful, that's for sure.
So, yeah.
But, you know, with the price of pitching as it is nowadays, I'm reflecting back a little more on the draft that the Marlins had, and pretty stoked that all six of their picks they had an extra competitive balance B round pick. All six were pitchers, power arms, power curves, big bodies with analytic backing. So I think it's testament of what they're doing to make sure they secure the flexibility to be able to sign what they need, but they also want to draft what they need ahead of when they need it.
All right, yeah. It's a great strategy. So I think we touched on a lot of the Marlins. You know, what, you have any other thoughts? Just kind of closing thoughts on their whatever season, off season, anything?
Just overall, I'm happy with how last year went. It was exciting because it was a time when we needed something to distract us and baseball got started, and amidst the chaos brought a little bit of normalcy back to our lives, and watching the Marlins do as well as they did ahead of schedule really provided some hope and optimism for the future. And then this offseason's going pretty well. We unfortunately weren't able to retain Mike Hill, but Kim Ng is more than qualified to handle the responsibilities, and I'm really looking forward to see what kind of twists and turns she can put on this front office to kind of propel us even further in the future.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to see, and it'll be interesting, and you know, in a few years, maybe we'll see the Yankees and Marlins in the World Series. Derek Jeter against the Yankees.
Oh, that would be crazy.
That would be one hell of a show. I don't even, like, I actually, like, since obviously I'm a Yankee fan, I want to, like, see him succeed there. So it'd be kind of interesting. I would be kind of feel so weird seeing that. Like, I wouldn't know what to do. Like, I would be, like, kind of semi-rooting for Jeter, but at the same time, obviously, I don't want the Yankees to lose.
It'd be one of those win-wins, right? For a Yankees fan, get to see some ex-players be successful, even it is at the cost of your team. But, you know.
Yeah.
You just hope for a good series at that point.
Right. I'm kind of hoping that the Marlins win one before the Yankees. I mean, before they end up meeting, maybe the Marlins win the World Series like in 5 years, and then the Yankees and Marlins meet again. I mean, meet in the World Series like the year after or something.
See, and that would be good for you and me, because I'd have another World Series to cheer for. Yeah. But the NL East is getting a little scary with the Braves. You know what they are already. The sale of the Mets.
Yeah, that's going to be
promising a World Series title. What, 5 years, he said?
Yeah, 5 years, yeah. They're going to be spending like crazy, I think, this offseason.
Trevor, where do you think he ends up?
I said this – well, actually, my guest on my Dodgers pod said the same thing, but I think he ends up in New York. But I'm not going to say what team because I don't know, but I think it's going to be either the Yankees or the Mets. Which, obviously, I hope it's the Yankees as a Yankees fan, but –
Yeah, they Cole Bauer won too. Tanaka was a free agent too, right?
Yeah, so it'll be probably, if that happens, it would be Cole Bauer and then probably Severino 3. You know, coming back.
That wouldn't be too shabby.
But yeah, it's kind of Bauer also squashed the whole thing about him and Cole having a feud. He was just like, I have no problems with Cole at all. So I don't know. I knew the whole time that it was like some stupid thing that they had their differences, and when they both pitched at UCLA, that was it. Like that was years ago now. So it's like I don't think there was anything there to begin with.
Yeah, I think that could all be water under the bridge if they're all working towards the common goal.
Yeah. But yeah, Mets will be in the Lindor market as well. So we'll see what happens there. That'll be interesting. And then of course the Nationals, they're going to be good again, I think. Well, they didn't have the chance to go from 19-31 to the World Series this year, of course. So with a full season, they can turn things around again.
Oh, absolutely. And then the Phillies, they got a lot of the young talent coming too. It's just scary place to be in the NL East, but
yeah.
NL or AL East, I guess. But, you know.
I think right now the
NL – got to be on the schedule.
Sorry.
What was that? Sorry. I just said you got to be who's on your schedule.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say that right now the NL East is probably stronger than the AL East, because really the only two, well, yeah, in the AL East, it's really just the Yankees and Rays, because Red Sox are on a downfall right now. The Blue Jays are on their way up, but then, you know, obviously the Orioles are not going to be there for a while. So
that's true.
But yeah, so maybe 5 years, both divisions would be pretty strong.
Oh, I just love talking baseball.
Yeah. Gets you away from all this nonsense.
Absolutely.
Especially, like, not even just COVID, too. Like, all the election stuff and all that crap. Ugh.
Yeah, I don't deal with politics. I do my civic duty, and then I just kind of wait to see what happens. people get too wrapped up and have too many emotions in that. And I understand it, but I'd rather focus on other things.
Yeah. I don't want to talk. I don't like talking about it all, because then if I say something, one thing about it, then someone's going to be jumping down my throat like, blah, 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 blah. Like, I can't even get a word in edgewise.
Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, I'm about to start work on for the website I write for. Our top 50 prospects are going to start coming out in January, February, working on doing my top 50 prospects for the Marlins, and had a lot of debuts last year, but not a lot of graduations off the prospect list. So it's going to be interesting to kind of fold in some of these draft picks and figure out how to keep a lot of the people I am high on my top 50 list already there. So,
oh yeah,
that'll keep me distracted from politics for a while.
Right. That's Prospects 1500, right? That's the website.
Absolutely. Prospects 1500. We do 50 top prospects for each organization for the deep dynasty fantasy league needs. We do a focus on fantasy for the players.
Awesome. Yeah. So yeah, that's our Marlins discussion here, the off season. So yeah, thanks again for coming on for, you know, the second time now. So you're always welcome back whenever.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, sure thing. So yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back with more episodes for the off season, going over each team. And as signings come in, any trades, of course, as well. So, yeah, and we'll be doing, we'll still be doing articles on, you know, as these signings come in on the website, on primetimesportstalk.com. And also coming up, the Hall of Fame ballot was announced. So we'll be doing some, you know, Hall of Fame cases for the players that are on the ballot this year, and they'll be elected the same time as the ones that were elected last year. I mean, you know, elected last year, but they didn't actually have the ceremony yet, so that they got it pushed back because of COVID. So that'll be a dual election ceremony. So that'd be interesting. I'm probably going to try to go to it if I can get a good hotel or whatever, but because I was planning on going to it to begin with this year, but then it got pushed back, of course. So yeah, that's you can check that out, all those stuff on Primetime Sports Talk, as we also do a bunch of football stuff. And now that's good, that's in full swing right now with, you know, DFS and fantasy stuff that's big on our site. So yeah, thanks for listening again, and you can never have too much pod tar.